So this is a blow-up of the photograph before, and here we have Arthur Ravoux. He ran the auberge here, and he was there around Van Gogh's deathbed. There is one of the daughters, Germaine. There is the daughter, Adeline Ravoux. She's important. She wrote memoirs. She's 13 years old in this photograph. Here we have baby Raoul Levert, who is the seventh son of the carpenter Levert. And carpenter Levert, he made Vincent Van Gogh's coffin. And baby here was a subject for Vincent's paintings, as was Adeline, as we shall see. You can see at the foot of the coffin, we laid out his palette and brushes. The trestles had been lent to us by the neighbour, Monsieur Lavert, the carpenter, the youngest child of whom was painted by Van Gogh in the painting Child with an Orange. Also, Monsieur Lavert made his coffin. So this is Adeline Ravoux's memoirs, and very moving they are. And there she is reading her own memoirs in 1954. And there we can see Adeline Ravoux, sort of like a painting by Vincent. And you got the dates there sometime between the 17th and the 21st of June, 1890. And she observed that when Vincent painted, he blinked a lot. He had this sort of like really sort of like fast, rapid blinking. And we'll talk about the intensity of his painting and his physical expression while he painted a little bit further on, because we do have eyewitnesses of that as well. And Adeline, in her memoirs, she talks about having Vincent there in the auberge as a lodger. We liked him very much and addressed him in the friendly way, Monsieur Vincent. He came in around noon for his lunch, which was typical of inns at that time, meat and vegetables, salad and dessert. He never sent anything back. He was never any trouble. And it's interesting also that by this time he had given up alcohol. And he wrote this in a letter to the Ginoux family that were keeping his furniture. And they were friendly enough. He was close enough to them to say to the Ginoux, I haven't drunk now for a year. And isn't that interesting? Because if you give up drinking for a year, then there is perhaps the question of, well, you must have done it because it was kind of damaging you in some way. And indeed, Vincent, he said, I've given up drinking and my work has improved greatly as a result. And we'll come back to the demon drink in a little while. In fact, we'll come back there now. And first of all, I would like to serve you all a glass of, can you read that? Oh, absinthe. And then look, that's absinthe up there, but look on the label, absent. So if you drink too much of this, you go absent. And this is a bottle I got in when we went up to Auvers-sur-Oise to do some research on this. And we actually bought a little mini bottle of absinthe from the wonderful Absinthe Museum up there, which I'll talk to you about in a moment. Really sweet museum run by a wonderful lady. And we got like the bottom of the range absinthe, which was like 13 or 14 euros. But some of it can cost you, you know, 27, 28 euros. And absinthe was a sort of like the demon drink and the favoured drink of the Belle Epoque. And also for writers, painters, artists in general, absinthe was the chosen drink because it was supposed to give you a high like no other high. And if you consumed enough of it, it was supposed to give you hallucinations. Although I think through solid medical research, you'd have to drink so much absinthe to hallucinate that you would certainly pass out before from its toxicity and perhaps die, because the original absinthe had can you see the writing's not clear and the pronunciation isn't easy. Thujone, I think, is the name, and thujone is the molecule that's in absinthe that is essentially considered to be rather poisonous and toxic. And it was present in the original absinthe. The original formula was banned in 1914 for public health reasons, but you can still get absinthe today, as you can see, but it's not got the same levels, tiny little doses of foudrone in it. So not as much fun. And serving absinthe has a ritual to it, which is also kind of addictive. And look at this, I've got a mock-up of what you're supposed to do. There's an absinthe spoon, which is perforated with a sugar cube. And what you're supposed to do is to pour the absinthe over the sugar cube, and the spoon is basically on the top of the glass. And I've got the spoon the wrong way round, because it should fit. There's a notch there that fits on the rim of the glass. So you pour your absinthe through a sugar cube, and the absinthe will basically pull the molten sugar down into the glass. The sugar cube. I really have had too much. I'm just going to have another drink there. The sugar cube, basically, actually, they're still on there. It's got a wonderful smell, like Pernod or pastis, that type of thing. So what you do is, now listen, what you do is you have the sugar cube on the top. You do pour the absinthe through the sugar cube. Then you light the sugar cube. And you've got, you know, alcohol content that can be as high as 60, 72 degrees. You've got a flame. And the flame slowly will turn green. And that's when you've seen the green fairy. And then what you do is you basically put the whole lot underneath a water dispenser. And you turn on the tiny little taps. It's like a water fountain is the word, with lots of beautiful little miniature taps. And the water will douse the green fairy flame. And your molten sugar is then taken down into the glass. So there you've got this wonderful drink together with a wonderful ritual that goes with it. However, the dangers of it. Here we've got evidence of Vincent van Gogh being an absinthe drinker, because here we've got a work by him which is called Glass of Absinthe and Carafe, 1887. There you've got Vincent van Gogh by Toulouse-Lautrec in a cafe in Montmartre, and there you can see quite clearly that there is a glass of absinthe in front of him. So certainly, like many, he would have drunk absinthe when it was available. And it's quite possible that some of his alcohol-fueled rows, which sometimes turned violent with Gauguin, were fueled by absinthe. But it's interesting to note, again, that in her investigations, Bernadette Murphy, she studied an inventory of Vincent's local cafe. And in those days, they did these stock takes that were basically down to the last item. And in the stock take of what was in that cafe, among all of the bottles of wine and cognac and na-na-na, there wasn't a single bottle of absinthe. So that's quite intriguing, isn't it? And this is what happens to you if you consume too much absinthe. There is the green fairy. And the green fairy, that's a poet who's trying to write a poem, trying to drink his inspiration from a glass. And after a while, it's sort of like a whiplash, and you become a victim of the green fairy, who will get on your shoulders and sort of like send you crazy. So the Absinthe Museum in Auvers-sur-Oise is run by this lady here. She's got the bar, which is like next door, and she does private groups. And look, there's an absinthe fountain with all of the little individual taps. Beautiful. The collection that she's got is absolute period stuff. And she's got this really cute, like, little museum. She's as bright as a button, and she welcomes and entertains visitors in groups. And there, you know, there you can see absinthe is all poured out, and the lovely sort of like the absinthe fountain there, very spectacular. And she told me a wonderful story. They've got this absinthe spoon, which is kind of like the prize in her collection, and she's sort of like famous, you know, far and wide. And she was actually sent by Francis Ford Coppola's production team, she was sent a request from the other side of the pond to borrow, rather rent or buy, this spectacular absinthe glass for a scene in Coppola's 1992 Dracula with Gary Oldman and Winona Ryder. And if you look at that scene in this wonderful film, I think that as a version of Dracula, it's by far the best I've ever seen. It's superb, great acting. You'll see that there's this absinthe spoon that was sent over to the United States for the filming by the lady. And she said she had a contract. She didn't sell it. She basically rented the spoon. And in France, she said, if you rent or, you know, lend something to a film company, you'll never see it again because they are slack and arrogant and, you know, you just won't see it. It'll disappear. It's almost like a sort of like a given over here. But you know what? She made sure it was well insured, but the thing came back. And it came back on exactly the day they promised to send the absinthe spoon back to her. So Francis Ford Coppola and team, that's great. And there's me, looking. I was in the film as well, starring with Gary Oldman. They decided he was the better actor. So I lost my job. I was cut out of all of the scenes. And there's Winona Ryder. And just another story about absinthe before we move on. There's a lovely display in there that describes, because Pernod, they used to make absinthe, and there was a fire at the Pernod factory, which was caused, in fact, by a lightning strike. And this lightning strike, it was in August the 11th of 1901. And the lightning basically went down, the electricity went down into the sort of the big tanks of alcohol, caused this incredible fire. Thankfully, there was a worker who was very quick-witted, and he had the presence of mind to go down into the cellars, and he opened up all of the tanks. And so he, to avoid an explosion, he basically released all of this burning absinthe that then flowed into the river where the factory is. It's right next to the River Doubs, essentially. And the river, of course, started smelling of absinthe. And the weird thing is, a tributary river in the same region suddenly also started to smell of absinthe. They didn't know it before. They didn't know that these two rivers were connected. And it was this sort of like strange, almost like a geological experiment, they found out that there was some kind of like subterranean interconnection between these two rivers in that region. So it's the kind of thing they do, isn't it, in speleology, where they put dye into a river and see into an underground cave stream, and they see where the dye comes out. And there you've got a photograph of all of the absinthe bottles which were fused together in the intense heat of the fire.